I'm sitting on the Radio Gorgeous red bed with the agony aunt for Grazia magazine. She's also an expert on Made in Chelsea, having written about it for 4 years now. She writes witty articles for The Guardian, The Stylist, The Daily Mail, Glamour, Marie Claire and The Sunday Times and many more. She is Dear Daisy Buchanan, and we're talking today about her book, How to Be a Grown-Up. Hi, Daisy. Welcome to Radio
Gorgeous. Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Absolute pleasure. So, I love your writing. It's lively and funny and just so out there. Can you first tell us the craziest bit of advice in your book?
Well, thank you so much for the lovely compliment. I'm going to say the craziest advice is probably where I tell people how to wash their hair, as it's quite a short chapter, but there is a chapter on hair washing. And I dare say people listening will think, I've been washing my hair by myself for quite some time now. Why do I need this strange woman to tell me how to do it? And to be honest, I put the chapter in because, you know, there are other more serious chapters, and I thought, oh, I was putting off the one called How to Be Sad because I thought, well, that's going to be quite sad. So I thought, well, I'll do this and it'll get me up to the word count, and I'll do 2,000 words on hair washing because it's something that's very close to my heart. And my editor might well say, yeah, no, we need to take this out.
Okay,
but actually, she was really, really positive, enthusiastic, and so many readers have been too.
Oh.
I had an old hairdresser who told me I'd been washing my hair all wrong. And I thought, what are you talking about? What do you mean washing my hair wrong? And he's like, well, I can tell that, you know, you don't properly comb the conditioner through and just do it with your fingers. I'm like, what other way is there? So it's about doing a double shampoo.
Sounds to me is very old-fashioned, you see. That's the advice they used to give in the 60s. So they're still saying, why do you do two washes then?
Well, the first wash really just kind of loosens the dirt, and then the second one actually cleans. I guess it's like a double cleanse. But to be honest, the technical aspect is very satisfying, and it is effective, and because I've got quite thick hair as well, so I only wash it about twice a week.
So doesn't he say put conditioner on, because obviously I love this chapter, and then get a brush and comb, or wide comb and brush it?
Yeah.
Is that what he says?
I was recommended a tangle teaser.
Ah.
I'm a big fan. Mm. But also it's about the fact that there aren't many places now where we can spend some time by ourselves away from our phones. And if we're feeling a bit anxious or nervous or freaked out or worried, then, you know, going in the shower, and it's quite hard. And sometimes I really want to just reach for something to kind of distract me from myself and my own thoughts. Naturally.
How long have you got to leave a conditioner on, you see? That's probably when you get bored, Daisy.
To be honest, I mean, I love a mask, but if it's just once you've combed it through, and I think combing it through with the comb or tangle teaser, that's what makes it really kind of sink in. So you don't have to wait for ages. You've just got to be prepared to work it through.
That's
but
good.
Obviously, you know, I do. If you've got a bit longer, then, you know, you can sort of work up to it. But, you know, it's about doing something that's a real, you know, investment in yourself. And I think so many of our beauty rituals are about the way we look to other people, and it's sort of about what's outward. But this is just something, it's in a really nice way, I think it's quite selfish and quite satisfying. And also when we all rush so much now, it's something that you can't really rush.
Also, what's really nice about it, it's not about product, it's about how you do it.
Mm.
And, you know, nowadays we're all thinking, have I got the best conditioner? Have I got the best shampoo? Because of advertising, because of all these blooming beauty blogs. And that's irrelevant, you're saying, really. It's how you do it, which
it's
I love.
So true. And to be honest, for a lot of my 20s, I'd spend huge amounts of money I didn't really have, thinking the right product would fix me. But you're so right, it is all really down to technique more than anything else.
Fabulous. We love it. Okay, so next is, what is this book about then? It's for 20-somethings. It's called How to Be a Grown-Up. What is it? Philosophy? What is it?
It's a book I wanted to write that's funny and kind.
Mm.
Often it pops up in the self-help section, and I think it is self-help to a point, but, you know, while I'm a big fan of the genre, and there are lots of fabulous self-help books out there, a lot of the time I think it's easy to give advice, but most of the people who want advice, they don't want to be told what to do because they know what to do. They just want a bit of reassurance. So it's a hug of a book. I wanted to write a book where if you woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning and you're thinking, oh, my career, my overdraft, my terrible, terrible ex, you could pick it up and find a chapter and it would just be like a hug, or like phoning your mum when you can't really phone her without waking her up when you're far from home, and just something that would make you feel really loved and understood. Because I think that, you know, most of the women, especially who I've met who made me want to write this book, they're all really smart and great, and they know what they're doing and they deserve good things. They just need that bit of love and self-belief. I know,
and also
that
this is like the sort of things that people don't talk about, really, this book, isn't it? Because you go into detail about things that most people don't want to face, or in public maybe face, you know, like anxiety or jealousy. You know, these are things that we all have in our lives, but we can have always got to put on this lovely act that we haven't got them.
Oh, God, sometimes I think I'd love to write a whole book just about jealousy, because I think we're in such a weird, difficult era now. Mm. We just know so much more about each other's lives than we ever have. And while we've got access to all of that information, we've not been given any kind of, you know, structure to deal with it. We've got to find where the tools are. And something I think we never really say out loud is, I'm really jealous of that person's post, or I feel like I want their life. And it's easy to say, oh, I hate them because they're showing off.
Yes.
But actually, it's much harder to say, I feel as though I'm missing something because of what this person has. And as soon as you name your jealousy, it shrinks a bit.
Fabulous.
And I think, and also, I think it's in the book, and something I feel very strongly, there are so many, I think almost entirely women who I've been madly, crazily jealous of, often because of their brilliant careers. And then we've become great friends. And
In the end,
I had decided the best thing I can do to deal with my jealousy is to go and prove to myself that, you know, this person might be worth knowing. And I don't think there has been a single case where that hasn't been true. That everyone who sort of, you know, inspired sort of jealousy that's put a fire in my heart has actually, you know, a lot of them are women I've then become really very close to.
Yeah, because what's interesting about jealousy is it's like from the outside, they look like they've got a perfect life, and you get to know them and you find out that they, you know, they've got problems with their home, children, life, career, you know, and then as you say, when you find out they're human and they've got faults, then it's like, how can you be jealous? And you're empathising. What about if you're jealous of just general jealousy, you know what I mean? Like Facebook jealousy, jealousy on Instagram. What if you are just very much in pain? What would you give advice to people?
I think the very best thing you can do, and it's very hard advice to take because I've been in this situation and not taken my own advice, but step away from the internet. Just get off the screen for 10 minutes, leave your phone at home and go for a walk. And it's so hard to remember, but it's so important to remember, it really is the tip of the iceberg. The picture you see is what people are choosing to show you. Another thing I find it really helpful to remember is sometimes I feel as though I've become horribly self-absorbed, and in my head, it's me, and then the sort of giant mega person with 30 heads I've created. He's a combination of all of the different people I'm jealous of in different ways. Sometimes as well, I think, you know, when you're feeling and you've got a bit of distance from jealousy and you feel like it's safe to be on social media, have a look at your own Instagram grid or your Facebook profile and see it through a stranger's eyes and think about how it could be interpreted, because I dare say other people are jealous of you as well. And it's not to say, you know, great,
oh God,
you're making them jealous.
That makes us feel really good, doesn't it? Daisy, now you've published this book, everyone's so jealous of you. Do you feel better now?
Well, it's funny as well, because I don't know, and it's been a really weird exercise since the book came out to have to, I guess, define myself and say, yes, I am a writer and this is what I do.
Yes.
And, you know, I still worry all the time that it's almost as if someone's going to come up and sort of rip my clothes off, not in a, you know, a bad way, and discover I'm not, you know, a human woman. I'm
called
a load of monkeys and a trench coat. Imposter syndrome.
Yeah, yeah.
Old friend.
Yeah, so you do have it then?
Chronically.
Oh my gosh.
And I don't know anyone who doesn't. And, you know, going back to the people I'm jealous of, I think they all have it too. I think that quite often, whenever a nice thing happens to me, especially with, you know, career stuff, it feels a bit like I've won a competition. And then other people you know, get the things. And I think, well, of course they have, because they deserve it. They're much better. But something that does interest me is when at points in my 20s, when I was single and between relationships, and I had one especially bad relationship with a guy who he'd sort of say one thing one day and then the next say, no, you're crazy for thinking that, and he'd really be sort of quite manipulative.
That's
called gaslighting.
Yeah, gaslighting.
And you know, we're seeing it now with Love Island's on telly, really destabilizing. Yeah. And then I would constantly look at people's relationships on Facebook, and it's almost like that was all I'd notice. So other stuff would be going on, but all I would see was weddings and engagements. And then I don't want to say, oh, and you know, then I've met a man and that was the answer, but I met my husband. We've been together for 6 years. It's bad that I had to think it was 5 or 6.
So you met him in your 20s?
Yes.
How old are you now?
I'm now 33. Okay. And I met him the day after my 27th birthday.
Okay, quite a good age, because you know, you sort of, you know who you are a bit more by then.
And that point really was, I think, I was just very aware that, I suppose I felt that my 20s were ending and all, you know, the being very irresponsible. And I think I was very irresponsible.
I hope you were.
It's a good thing to be.
I think, you know, you've got to be, if you can't be irresponsible in 20s, when the hell can you be?
Exactly.
You know, that's it. You know, I remember things like I just couldn't be, I left jobs because I slept in because I'd been to nightclubs the night before, or, you know, just was in bed with a nice bloke and I thought, I can't be fucked with. You know what I mean? It's like you sort of, you know, just you put your priorities are different.
I remember once after a big weekend coming into work, and when I was working at Bliss, the teen mag, it was one of those very, very rare workplaces that was just quite chilled out. And I think that when I graduated in 2007, and I think that when I entered the workplace, everything was maybe just beginning to get a bit less chilled out and a lot more corporate, and the sort of, you know, going from like, it's normal to take an hour for lunch, you should take an hour for lunch, to sort of, you know, be at your desk at all times. And my first job that I got fired from was a very corporate financial PR job. But Bliss, in lots of respects, was pretty relaxed, and it worked because, you know, we all worked together and we produced a magazine that we're all really proud of, and everyone pulled their weight. But I do remember there wasn't really a dress code, and it was the company, the publishing company, also did like the Panini stickers. And so it was just everyone in kind of Converse and old band t-shirts. And it looked like, it always reminded me of university parties where I lived with a load of very, very sweet nerds. And my friends were all a bit theatrical, and everyone would sort of be in, you know, lingerie and ball gowns. And then you'd have some people in the corner in like hoodies and fleeces. And that was the Bliss office, really. But once I did come in, basically wearing a bikini with a sort of beach throw over it, and me thinking, today is the day where I'm going to get called in for a chat with Alan about how that's not acceptable office attire. But it didn't happen.
Fabulous.
No one said a thing.
Fabulous. It's encouraging, actually, isn't it? Just what you want.
It's God, what
that
you
means
need,
that it
that
was
freedom.
Just, to be honest, having a laugh at work is the most important thing. And I just say to anybody out there, if you're not in having, it's all about relationships, work. And if there's someone that's really annoying you, don't you think you should just...
Oh, good. Well, I worry now, because I think that especially for, you know, people in their 20s and
even
women
getting
in their 20s,
a job's impossible.
Even getting a job is really, 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 really hard. Yeah. You know, and no one, you sort of are expected to intern forever. No one has any money.
Nothing.
And also this sort of, you know, the girl boss culture. I think there are lots of really good things about that. I love that so many women are being entrepreneurs and really creating their own empires and taking control. But also, I do think it's got a bit earnest and a bit serious sometimes. And I think we need to bring back having a laugh.
And fluffiness and glitter and being silly and, and giggling. And, you know, I mean, it's the most important thing about being alive to me. I think we're quite similar, actually.
I think you're right.
In fact, I know why we're similar, because you suffered panic attacks, and I had my first one when I was 19. I had a chronic anxiety order until I was about 40. But when I was young, in the 80s, when I went to the doctor, I said, hello, I've got these awful feelings. And he said, eat more bran. Then I went to another one and they said, go...
I laughed. That's so awful. It's amazing.
Yeah. I know. No, don't worry. Anyway, so I had to cope with my anxiety attacks totally on my own.
I'm so, so sorry that happened. Yeah. That's awful. And also, I'm just thinking, you know, this is too much information, but the effect anxiety has on my bowels, the last thing you want is bran, bloody hell.
Exactly. Yeah, I spent a lot of time rushing to the loo, But no, it was really, really difficult because I got agoraphobic. I couldn't go on tubes. It took me hours to get around London. I lived in Hackney at the time, so I was like going on buses and it took hours. So how did you deal with your anxiety? I had to do it by reading books on nerves written in the 1930s. And that's about it, really.
I mean, I think that in itself is a book that I long for you to write because it would be brilliant. But I don't know if it's, you know, this is similar, but I had it wired into me so much. It wasn't really until I was about, I think, maybe 24, that I discovered there was a word for what I was. And I just thought, because I went to a very academic school, and in lots of ways that was a huge, huge privilege, and I was really, really lucky, but we all put so much pressure on ourselves, and there was so much pressure to be sort of intensely successful and, you know, to get the grades, but also, you know, well, everyone's got the grades, so what else are you going to do to stand out and just to keep performing? And I remember not long after I started at Bliss, having to take a day off and, you know, not, I mean, I barely got paid anything because I was an intern, but if I didn't come in, I didn't get paid at all. But I had really, really, really terrible chest pains. And I went to A&E and no one could figure out what was wrong with me. And it was just because I was so like, oh, I've got the job I want the most in the whole world. And what am I going to do to mess this up? And, you know, this is all a disaster. So then later it was a GP appointment, and I put my back out doing something, and it's I'm sure anyone who has back issues will know that they normally sort of frown and say, not much we can do about backs. Yeah. Just, yeah. Have you thought about swimming? I can't walk. How am I gonna get in the pool? As a side note, I would quite like to mention the bed of nails, which I do not get paid to flog, but I got one on Amazon. I think they're on Cult Beauty as well, and that's a big help for my back pain.
It's not an S&N practice.
Sadly not, no. And so anyway, GP said, so how's work? Are you stressed at all? And I just sort of burst into tears for 5 minutes, and which is quite a long time when you're crying and your doctor is completely silent and a very awkward middle-aged man who doesn't know what to do. So he sort of, without meeting my eye, said, I think you need to, I'm going to write you a prescription for antidepressants and refer you to a counsellor. And my first counsellor was utterly fantastic and just really, really great at making me feel sane when that was the last thing I had been feeling. And
that's then, a scary thing. You really do think you're going mad. Yeah.
Because it's so subtle. And I think as well, because of the relationship that I was in at the time, and in any kind of anything with the gaslighting, this guy would say, whenever I was needy, when I was upset, whenever I said, look, I need to feel as though you love me and you're here for me and you care about me, he'd say, oh, you're clingy, you're so crazy, you're too much, I hate when girls go like this, I'm going to go sailing in Spain for 3 weeks, don't call me, you mad cow.
God, this is, and that will make you feel worse. I mean, just, So did the pills help? That's what
Do you know what? They really, really did. And I know that there are lots of different views on antidepressants and they're not for everyone. It can take a while to get your right one right and your dose right. But I feel as though now it gives me the mental energy and the wherewithal to do the other things I love that really help.
So you're still on them?
Meditating. Still now. It's quite a low dose. Yeah. And I've tried sort of coming off them and I'm just very happy to keep. But for me, it's good because I still feel like me. I had a friend who was on a different antidepressant and she said that she stopped fancying people.
Yes. There's one, your libido completely go. You can't even wank. Sorry.
Oh, I would be miserable if that was not...
Just say that's another chapter, girls. We won't go into that one. But, you know...
As it were.
But it is. Yeah, exactly. Fantastic. But you're on the road and everything's great. So let's see what else we've got here. So self-care is mentioned in the book. What is self-care? Why should we practice it?
I mean, broadly speaking, it's making time to look after yourself in a way that makes sense to you and just making sure that you are being as kind to yourself and giving yourself as much care and attention as you would to your very best friend and the people that you love the most. So, I mean, I think in the book I say that one of my, although, you know, they're they're on their way out. I've got very sparkly gold nails.
Oh, yeah, let me have a look. Oh, beautiful. Yeah.
So for me, getting my nails done is, you know, that's time when, and again, yes. you can't look at your phone because, mm-hmm. you know,
your
lady gets very cross, yeah. your nails are wet. Stop that. You know, you're out of the house, mm-hmm. listening to the radio,
and you're
having
pampering
a nice chat.
A little,
yes.
aren't you?
But mm-hmm. then for some people, they find doing their nails is the best self-care. Other people love gardening. Yeah. I love, again, flower arranging. I think because we do so much with our heads and so little with our hands, I would say that anything that is less head, more hand, which brings us back to wanking. Sorry. But that's a good place to start.
Yeah, it's a best stress buster and it's also a brilliant hangover cure, I find.
Oh, that's so true.
When you can't get out of bed as well. So I like it. So it's taking time out for you. And it's so amazing that you're saying this to 20-somethings, because this is what, could I've been a mother, my children are now kind of quite old, 19 and 21. But, you know, it's always like our age group are always being told you've got to take time out. So it's now even 20-somethings. I suppose, again, it's the internet pressure. In fact, you do have an internet heading for one of your chapters, don't you?
Really? Well, someone who's in the book who I talked to, he said that her favourite self-care thing used to be baking. She really, really loved, but just that kind of radio on in the kitchen, pottering about flour, loved it. And she made really good, delicious cakes. And then someone said, hey, this could be a business. Put the cakes on Instagram. Why not sell them? Have this help. And she just said her lovely, relaxing hobby that had no point or purpose beyond her having a nice time became this hugely stressful, fraught exercise where she thought, but I need more Instagram followers for my business. And I've got this order and it's got to be perfect. And how am I going to get this cake across London? And I think that's, you know, the trouble that we have now is that
we sort of... we can do anything we want in a way, like, so we can, you can just have a new career by saying I'm on Instagram making cakes. It's more of a pressure.
And it's difficult because in lots of ways it's hugely liberating. But I think that we feel as though we have to wring out a purpose of every single activity and sheer joy for joy's sake.
I like that. I think that's the really most important thing you said today, actually.
Oh, good.
Joy for joy's sake.
Very wise and profound. Joy for joy's sake. Yeah. Get that on T-shirts, I think.
Exactly. Make them say, how to be a grown-up, joys for joy's sake. Let's talk about a surface. I was going to go into the hair chapter because obviously I was very interested in that. And you've also got some tips how to get dressed. Any ideas? Clothes?
I wrote this in part because... when I went freelance, which was about 6 years ago, I realised I didn't really need to get dressed. And then on the days when I did, I thought, I used to do this every day. What's going on? And having this really odd collection of clothes that were kind of what I'd call outdoor pyjamas, where they're, you can leave the house in them just about. And then having lots of, you know, dresses and, you know, things that are a bit more glamorous. And then nothing really for... actual real life. And I thought, how have I got to this point and not figured this out, because it's so basic. And also I went from a point of, you know, everything I was being a bit defined by, you know, budget and simply having no money and going out all the time and dressing for that, and just thinking I like dresses and they need to be things that I don't mind people spill wine on, to thinking I've got a little bit more money and I love clothes, but I don't know where to begin. Mm. And I feel as though everybody else has somehow... again, it's the Instagram thing.
Yeah, everyone's so much more stylish.
Everyone's become this, like a stylist without me realising. And then so it was trial by error. So I got a load of grown-up clothes and I thought, you know what I need? Everyone needs black trousers. Because I don't wear trousers ever. I almost never wear trousers. But I realised the things I was actually getting a load of wear out of were just the things that I thought, oh, I love this. Like, I've got a my gold sequined maxi skirt. Surprisingly, you know, you can wear sequins in the daytime. I can do anything. Also,
so choose something fabulous as opposed to sensible, then.
It's so true that everything, if you've got any... I mean, I know there are some jobs and things that require a bit of sort of sensible dressing, but... especially, you know, in sales, and you think, oh, great, you know, the white shirt and the perfect grey cashmere jumper. And when you see them hanging in your wardrobe, you think, oh, yes, there you are, you sensible. You know, like those, the friends that you really like and you've known for ages, and there's nothing wrong with them, but every time you see them, they spend a really, really long time telling you that you should, I don't know, read all of Hilary Mantel and stop reading old Sweet Valley High books, or that they can recommend you a really good bathroom grouter, and you think, oh.
So they're people that have really grown up. That's the problem. They've gone overgrown. They've turned middle-aged, I'd say, in a bad way.
It's true. You know, when you've got the option, you know, pick the clothes that make you feel like you're drinking champagne rather than the clothes that make you feel like you're drinking Horlicks.
Exactly. So, so we cannot cover all your chapters today. I'll read out a few. How to be social, the internet I've mentioned before, how to relax, wanking, which you mentioned, how to be confident. There's many, many more.
I do want to say that the internet chapter talks a little bit about when it was first introduced to our school, and me and my friend Megan said it would never catch on, and we were happy with Microsoft in Carter. So don't come to me for any gambling
future
tips.
Events advice. Yes. World domination advice.
I am the opposite of a futurologist.
Fantastic. So is there anything today that you want to tell Radio Gorgeous listeners which we have not covered?
I think what I do want to say is it's graduation season, and I dare say lots of listeners will be maybe either graduating or perhaps have children who are coming up to that time. And oh, sorry, what I really wanted this book to be for, it's not a perfect this is how you live your life in your 20s prescriptive sort of guide, but I really hope that it would be useful and insightful for anyone who, you know, is approaching that period where they're just sort of about to start in the world and thinking, what do I do? Or any, you know, mums, I hope, might find it quite sort of useful and insightful. There is a chapter as well about what happens when, you know, when kids move back and how...
Oh, yeah, that's for me then, isn't it?
What it's like to have, you know, to have sort of, you know, housemates who are your parents. Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, so I'd like to recommend it's a graduation present.
And it's also a little, there's something, you don't have to be 20s, that's the main thing about it, do you? It's for all women. And have you seen some men reading it?
I have seen some men reading it, which has been really, really lovely. Mm. I mean, I'd like to think there's enough in it to make you laugh, no matter where you're approaching it from.
Exactly. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous today. You have been a delight.
It's been a total pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, lastly, just one more thing. You met your partner on Twitter. Can you quickly tell us how that happened?
He was very, very funny. I tweeted him to... in quite a forward, flirty way. And he said, quite a shy, oh, thanks very much. And then a bit later, he wished me a happy birthday because it was my birthday. I impulsively invited him to my birthday party. He couldn't make it, but said, let's go for drinks after. And that was that. So, yeah, when I curse Twitter sometimes, I think, well, no, it has brought me enormous joy.
Exactly. And thank you so much. And so did your book. It's absolutely fantastic. So How to Be a Grown-Up by Daisy Buchanan is published today by Headline. For even more extraordinary women, go to Radio Gorgeous first.